This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, and this is Cruise Control. For today, you're a little bit surprised to hear my voice first, because normally you'll hear Richard Bradbury, but fortunately, Richard is away, so I'm here with Tan Sri Arif Roos, who will share the studio with me. Later in the show, we'll be talking about headlight maintenance, and we'll also be reviewing the all-new Volvo XC40. But before that, we're going to get some news from the man called Arif Roos.
By the way, Daniel, I love that intro. It was so smooth, very smooth.
Buttery. So tell us, Arif, what's happening?
We're going to start with a few news bites, actually. The first of which is there are recalls for a third-gen Prius.
Yes.
Yeah, apparently the hybrid software needs to be updated, and if you don't, the car could actually shut off mid-journey. Is that right, Daniel?
Well, that's what the news that I read told us about. And then also, you know, Toyota also informed us officially. And we actually found out about this 2 days before the official news came out from UMW Toyota. We thought it was a global issue. And I was actually worried because a lot of people buy grey imported Toyotas,
yeah,
and especially hybrid models. So they would be affected because where do they go for the recall? Because it's not an official
car. That's true.
But now with UMW Toyota giving the official recall, I hope they will find it in their heart to help those who bought grey cars, which doesn't benefit them. But, you know, as a company, you know, you might say, yes, I'll help them out.
Well, grey import or not, if you've got a 2009 to 2013 Toyota Prius, you should go to a Toyota dealer and get it checked out.
Yes.
Next news bite, we've got the Ministry of Transport, who are thinking about a lifetime ban for reckless drivers. Mr. Anthony Loke, the Minister of Transport, said that the Road Transport Act should be amended so that drivers who cause road deaths would be banned for life.
I totally agree.
So you can tweet us at BFM Radio or head to our Instagram, where we will be posting an Insta story and a question. You can answer whether or not it should be amended so that drivers who cause road deaths are banned for life. Currently, idiot drivers are suspended for about 3 years. Is that enough?
I don't think 3 years is enough. Because if you cause a death, and if you're found to be taking drugs or just being a maniac on the road, banned for life is good. Because, you know, it is ride-sharing. You can still get to work.
Yeah, fair enough. Anyway, our third news bite of the day is the Works Minister says that they don't get enough money to maintain federal roads in Malaysia. Apparently, the yearly cost is about 2 billion ringgit to maintain about, 4 or 5,000 kilometers of road. But apparently, they've only been getting 600 to 800 million ringgit a year just to maintain the roads, which is well under half.
Well, Arif, I know, I think 2 billion, yes, is a lot of money, but I think 600 to 800 million is actually should be enough. I'm not a professional. Yeah. I'm not a road contractor. But looking at how there are so many layers in the pavement and there are so many layers in the contractors, I think 600 to 800 million will be more than enough to maintain the roads properly if they're not layered. You know, the other day, I took a picture and put it on Instagram.
Yeah.
One tractor digging a small hole at the side of a road, 5 people were standing and watching. That's labor. Labor costs 5. In Japan, I've been to Japan many times and I've seen when they're digging a road, there's just one guy watching and the tractor driver. Why do you need 5 people to watch? So this is a simple example of costing too much money to do something because labor cost is overrated.
That's a good observation,
yes,
actually. Yeah.
Yes.
Moving on to our next story, we've got that the Euro 4M fuel, RON 95, will be delayed until 2020. It is supposed to be out now. If you don't know what Euro 4M fuel is, it's generally the fuel grade denominator that the EU uses to rate their fuel on emissions and cleanliness and all that stuff. Do you think we'd be able to tell the difference between Euro 2M and Euro 4M fuel?
Physically, you can't tell the difference. Driving, you hardly any difference. I mean, you have to be a real niggler when it comes to, you know, understanding your car engine and how it performs. But I will tell you this. The end result is the air quality. Hmm. The end result is the carbon buildup in your engine. The end result is how smooth your car is over a long period of driving. Fuel quality is like, for example, for a human, if you take tap water every day, you're going to be sick.
Yeah.
If you take recycled water, you're also going to be sick. But if you get pure mineral water from the mountains of Kedah, you know, you'll be really healthy.
Yeah.
So it's just like fuel. Same thing. It's how good quality that you put into your engine. That's your heart.
Yeah, we've got to wait until 2020
for
a good, clean engine. Another big news about the national car is that a prototype of the national car will be coming next year. By the way, they are calling the new national car the NNCP, which I suppose I should spell that out. New National Car Program.
Wow. That's really smart.
I know. This one was by Might, and I believe you mentioned it last week.
Yes.
And they finally had a press conference about it, right? The Industry and Trade Minister, Mr. Darrell Laking, says that the new national car will be an ASEAN collaboration, but it won't compete with Proton or Perodua because they're already focused on the domestic market. I'm slightly confused about this because then who would you be competing with, right?
Well, my question is very simple. To whoever is listening out there who wants to debate me on this, please come to our Twitter page and Instagram page. If you can't get Perodua, who's doing such a good job, to be sold in the ASEAN market, and Proton has had so many problems trying to export. Yes, they do export, but the numbers are so small, it's just not feasible to even put it on a ship. Hmm. How are you going to do it with this car? Think about it. You've already got the big Chinese brands, apart from Geely, you've got the big Chinese brands already developing cars and pushing out in all these markets, and they've got the marketing dollar to play with.
Yep.
On top of that, you've got the Europeans who are already producing cars, which are plug-in hybrids and hybrids, and now you want to play in this game? I'm not ready for this.
Anyway, we got to move on to more news about Proton. On Thursday, I attended media preview of the new Proton X70. It was a huge showcase of its features, and they had people talking and demonstrating things. All in all, I think the car looks quite extensive in tech. It's almost Kia Hyundai competitor-ish.
Right.
It's touching and feeling all the materials. It feels like it's on par with the Japanese and the Koreans. So I think that's quite good.
But would you pay more than 100,000 ringgit for the Proton badge?
For the Proton badge, yes. But honestly, the quality, I don't think it's worth 120,000 that they're
exactly. That's the mindset that you've got to change in Malaysian mentality.
Yeah.
The Koreans tried it for many years. It's not easy. They had their challenges. Now for Proton / Geely to do it, I think it's going to be an uphill task. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, well, I knocked the door cars and it still kind of felt hollow. So, I don't know. It was wrapped in beautiful leather, but...
But, you know, hollow means it's lightweight, you know. It's more efficient.
Anyway, we're going to move on to the new cars. Plenty of it this week, actually.
Yes.
The first of which is the Hyundai Tucson facelift. Can you tell me more about it?
Well, this new Tucson actually is not completely new. It's a facelift, as you know. The car looks more like the new Santa Fe that's coming. And Hyundai need this. Hyundai needs this because you know why? The Tucson has been selling well. It's a nice vehicle. But with the facelift, they're going to get a lot of people attracted to the brand back because I think it looks very American.
I agree. I think it looks good.
Yes. And it's a nice, you know, chunky-looking vehicle.
Speaking of chunky-looking vehicles, we've got the Toyota Rush, which is launching next week.
Yes.
I think it looks like a Mini Fortuner.
Yes. And this is the vehicle that could give the X70 a little bit of a run for its money. Yes, the X70 has got more tech, it's bigger and everything else. But you know, that Toyota badge will always pull a certain demographic of Malaysian consumers to say, I'll just go with something safe and, you know, and reliable.
Power windows won't break.
Exactly.
We've also got the Kia Sorento, which you said on your website that has a price reduction from something to 164,000.
Exactly, which is a big fall in price despite the SST, you know, discount. And I think this is because Kia, like I said earlier, you know, the Koreans are always fighting hard to compete with the Japanese. And, you know, the Sorento is a very nice big SUV, 7-seater, lot of features on it, but they still have to fight. And, you know, by bringing the price down, they're playing with their margin. But there's only so much you can play with before you basically, you know, wave the white flag. So
I
think if you're really looking for 7-seater premium type SUV, just give it a test drive and see.
I honestly love the Kia Sorento. Another car we've got coming that follows the Ranger that we introduced last week is the Ford Everest.
Yes.
The technicals have been updated like the Ranger, so it's got 10-speed auto, 500 Newton meters of torque, and a lot of horsepower.
A lot of safety kit.
And it starts from about 229,000.
That's a very high price.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is because it's not local assembled. It's an imported vehicle. And, you know, at that price, people start looking at a Toyota Fortuner, which is also a 7-seater and, you know, a lot cheaper. But, you know, the thing is, end of the day, if you want something a bit different and you want to climb the mountain, Ford Everest.
That's the answer.
Yeah.
In other news, in more premium cars, we've got the...
Which is your market, Tantri.
Come on. Anyway, we've got the Mercedes AMG E53 sedan and coupe, which has been launched.
Yeah, I see a saliva coming out. Yeah, ooh, okay.
Gorgeous cars.
Stop drooling.
They start at 740,000 and 764,000 ringgit, respectively. The coupe is more expensive.
Of course.
Another special car we've got released here is the Porsche 911 GT3 RS.
2.23 million.
Is it sold out already?
Well, you know, when I asked them, they just shrugged their shoulders. I'm sure it's sold out because, you know, every time they launch a special car like this, Porsche in Malaysia, before even they launch the car, they just call a few, you know, individuals in Malaysia and they buy these cars. 80, 90% of them flip it. Flip it globally to make money. This is how the car business become. If you've got a super premium, super exclusive car, you can actually flip it and make money. Like the last few RS models were all flipped and they made money. Very few people actually kept their RS car.
There was that news, I think, about a year ago when Porsche released one of their special 911s. Right. I don't know if it was an RS or not, but they tried to write a contract and stop people from
flipping it. Yeah. Yes. So what they're trying to say is, which some other brands have also done, especially the Italian brands, if we find that you've flipped it, then we'll take you out of the purchase list for the future cars. But the thing is, you see now, say now I buy one of these cars and I flip it. And then they say, oh, you know, we're not going to let you. I can put it in my son's name. I can put it in Ali's name, your name. We got a Tan Sri. Easy. They'll pass the car to you and then I'll take it and I'll flip it again. And I'll give you a share in the takes. So that was the news from Mr. Arif Roos. And we talked about some new car launches, some news in the industry. And we also talked about who's flipping cars. Now we go to AT&T, which is brought to you by Volvo. And we're going to talk about headlight maintenance. This is Cruise Control, the auto show, the only auto show in the region, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. You know this is the station to listen to. We are back at Cruise Control, the auto show, the only auto show in the region. And we are back with my co-host, Arif Roos, who just gave us the news. And then our good friend, Richard Bradbury, is away. We are now going to talk about headlight maintenance, which has been a little bit of a pet peeve of me for some time.
Auto technology and tips brought to you by Volvo, made by Sweden.
Recently, I drove up to Genting Highlands for a car launch. And we stayed, we had some dinner there, and I was driving back, and it was very foggy. And of course, I was driving a test car, which was beautiful. You know, the headlights were all well aligned, and I could see where I was going. And then what I noticed is people were coming up behind me because I wasn't speeding. You know, you don't speed when you're coming down Genting Highlands.
Yep.
So I was keeping to the speed limit. And some of them, when they were overtaking me or just coming up behind me, I noticed nearly all of them had headlights that were misaligned. And some of them, their headlights were so badly aligned. They were not in high beam, but one beam was, you know, flashing against my rearview mirror. The other one was down. And also some of the headlamps have gone foggy that they were not bright at all. So you look at them, you think, is this a motorcycle coming? Or is this some really, you know, like there's two cars coming at one go. And you're thinking to yourself, how are these people looking ahead? I myself in this nice new car with beautiful headlamps, not able to see properly. And they're, you know, overtaking me and going faster with headlamps like this. Then I thought to myself, this is how accidents happen.
Yeah.
This is how a lot of people bang into another person or have problems on the road. And then they say, oh, you know, he was speeding. He didn't see me, blah, blah, blah. Yes, they didn't see each other because of headlamps. Then after they had overtaken me further down, as I was coming down the hill, you start seeing these people continuing to go even faster and faster and faster. And I'm thinking, how do you see? I'm going at 30, 40 kilometers downhill. And I'm thinking, how do I see? So I started looking back at all my cars, my older cars, and I remember, I don't think I've done any headlamp alignment in the last few years. I'm guilty also.
How often should you adjust your headlights? Because, you know, not many people even think.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So when I spoke to some mechanics I know, which I deal with, I say, hey, boss, when do people come and check their headlamps? Is it, oh, only when they have the problem. Okay. So only when you have a problem, you check. The thing is, when should you do it? Now, if you drive a new car, which is under warranty, when you go in for your service, they're actually supposed to check your headlamps for you, the alignment, before they pass you back the car. Now, even that, most of the time, they don't do it because they're busy, they're full up, it's crowded and everything else. So when does it really concern you is when you can't see. Or And sometimes when you can't see, you say, oh, maybe it's a surrounding. It's not my headlamps. But if you drive, if you have like, say, okay, say now you live in a condo.
Yeah.
And you come up to the car park and you're facing a wall and you see your headlamps are slightly misaligned. Take the time and trouble to go to a mechanic and do it. Now, fine, you're not driving in the fog all the time. But even when you're driving in rainy conditions or even when you're driving in late at night and street lights are not working, you need to have proper vision up ahead.
Tell us, how would you go around to aligning your headlights? Because there's a couple of techniques that people talk about. Like you get somebody else's car and you park it in front of a garage and take some tape and stick it on the wall where the light stops at
exactly,
the top, right?
Exactly.
So is it as simple as that?
I think with older cars, it's as simple as that. But I think with modern cars, because a lot of the headlamps are, you know, follow me lights and they're not mechanical anymore. They're all electronic. I think you need to go back to the dealership and they need to do it for you properly. There's probably some kind of tool that actually tells you exactly when's the right height, because the left and right headlamp does not have to be completely aligned.
It's sort of staggered, right?
It's sort of staggered, yes. And it also depends on the kind of car you're driving, because if you, for example, say, like, you know, you're a BMW guy, you have twin round headlamps. Or if you're driving like an older Jaguar, you have twin round headlamps. So maybe, you know, the main headlamp goes up, the smaller one comes down. I don't know how it works, but left and right, I know it's different alignment and different angles.
Oh my God. When I was doing my headlight alignments for my old 7 Series, they have 4 round headlights, right? It was such a pain just to try and align all of them at the same time.
Exactly.
It was annoying.
But you need a professional to do it.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're a real DIY guy and you know how to go online and check and all this. But again, you need the tools to do it and everything else. So I think, you know, if you can, if you go and service your car, if you're already servicing your car, what's the harm in asking the mechanic, hey, you know, can you just check my headlamp alignment? Now, a lot of them will say, yeah, boss, I'll do for you. And then they'll just go and tap it a little bit and charge you 20 ringgit. So, you know, again, you need someone you can trust to do it.
A lot of these cars that don't have aligned headlights, also, their headlights tend to be quite yellow, right?
True. That's because they've been.
It's been coated by the UV
radiation.
It's worn out, right?
Yes.
I've never been to a detailer shop or anything to try and fix it, so I don't know. I think it's expensive, but I assure you that doing this DIY would at least cost $100. And going to detailer, I don't know. I would think it would cost about $250.
Okay, I've gone to a detailer. I've got an old Nissan. Big headlamps, you know, when he did it for me, he charged me 50 ringgit for 2 headlamps. He did the job. But what he told me is, he said, okay, now I've done it. If you're going to be parking in the sun, as you always do, because the car is parked outside in the sun, I don't have a big porch. Maybe in a year or year and a half, it'll be back to its foggy self. I said, listen, I don't mind. I can come back after a year and a half. Then he said, yeah, but you know, every time I do this, I'm taking off like a micron or so. So after some time, there'll be no more to take off. So why don't you put a clear coat on it?
Yeah.
You know, I said, okay, after he did it, fantastic. But it lasted about nearly 11 months. Then when I went back to him, sorry to interrupt, but when I went back to him, he says, you see, in the sun, it happens. So now you want to do the clear coat, it's an additional 80 ringgit. So 50 plus 80, 130. But since I've done it, it's been 2 years and no issue. So, I mean, it's up to you. If you want to save a bit of money, you do it yourself, you know, get some toothpaste. I'm sure you can find a tube somewhere. But, you know, you go to the DIY shop these days, there's a lot of stuff there. And if you take the time and trouble to read it, the instructions are there. You can probably do it yourself.
And I think everybody should, because headlight maintenance is very important.
Yes, very important.
This segment was brought to you by Volvo. Inspiring technology, shaping tomorrow's mobility.
So that has been your AT&T insight on headlamp maintenance. Now, we are going to share with him the review of the car that he wants to drive.
Yeah, so badly.
Very badly. The new Volvo XC40. So, Arif, you went for the launch.
Yep.
I saw you there. Yeah. I just want your impression of the look of the car.
I think this is the most beautiful Volvo ever designed so far that we get, because we don't get the V60 here. And I actually pitched this question on our Instagram page, and everybody agreed that this is currently the most beautiful Volvo there is. Though I was slightly dumbfounded about the fact that this XC40, you know, is playing in the small SUV segment, but it looks huge.
In pictures, it looks small.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, when you see it on stage, even at the launch, I said, okay, it's not that large. But when you get into it, it's actually quite a sizable cabin. Now, the reason why I asked you, because I've realized that Volvo has designed this car for your age group, not for my age group.
Yeah.
You know, they've designed it for the young. Yeah. They've designed it for people who want something not so large, but they want all the little features that they come accustomed to. And they want it at a price that is easily accessible, even though you don't earn so much. But this is a car for, I think, the 20-something to 30-something. When I drove it, when I took it out, I started liking it even more and more because to start off with, I've always liked smaller vehicles. Yeah. I don't like big SUVs. I don't like big cars. So this is for me like the right size. And something about those big 21-inch wheels on that compact size, it's almost like, you know, brings me back to memory of a Tonka toy, you know?
That's true.
You know, and Tonka toys, I used to love Tonka toys. And I look at it, it's like a huge life-size Tonka toy. It's got like a two-tone effect because you got the R-Design black outline on it and everything else. And then I realized that this car also competes with the Mini.
Oh my God, you're right. I've never thought about that.
Yes.
Because when I was there, all I thought was that, okay, BMW X1 Mercedes GLE. Yes. This Volvo is much bigger than that. But then now you brought in the Mini.
It makes a lot of sense, right?
It makes a lot of sense.
Yes, because it's funky looking. It's got that big wheels, you know, a chunky body look, which the new Minis have. Except this is a proper off-road vehicle. They've seen the XC90, they've seen the XC60, and now comes the XC40. Something which has never been in the market. And we never had an XC40.
Yep.
So all that combined, I said, okay, Volvo has done it right. Now, when you come down to the features in this car has got all the features that caters to the younger generation. Like, you know, in-car charging, you know, the QI charging, the so many cubby holes. The younger generation, they like to carry a lot of stuff in the center compartment.
I also saw a YouTube review of this and they stuck in two big 1.5-liter bottles
right
in the front. And that blew me away.
In fact, they managed to do all this because they took away the speakers from the door panels and put it on the dash. And you see, the sound system has not been compromised. The way they've done the sound system, it feels like you're sitting in a real premium Volvo costing $400,000, but you're getting the sound system in something costing just $255,000.
On that sound system as well, they've got this air woofer system.
Yes, exactly.
I'm really not sure how it works, but
it works well, right?
It works well.
Yes. And normally when I take all these test cars out, I don't really bring my own music into the car. I don't pair my phone or anything. I just put on radio. Because why? Radio is a nice balance to gauge on every single vehicle we test. Because if you bring in your digital devices and you pair, sometimes some digital devices work very well with certain kind of sound systems, but not others. But if you use radio, just purely, you know, just tune into BFM, listen to whatever music is playing, whether it's rock, whether it's something slow, you get a general feel of how good that sound system is across all the test cars. And for $255,000, this sound system will actually impress a lot of younger generation people who really like to pump up the volume. Okay, now we go to the test drive.
I've read a lot of reviews and a lot of people aren't impressed with the steering dynamics and the gearbox.
Okay. Now, when I took the car, of course, I picked it up from Genting Highlands, right on top. So I'm coming down the hill. It's late at night. And like I said, it was foggy and we didn't want to go too fast. So we drove it, you know, nice and gently. We came down. Brakes were okay. Speed was okay. Everything was okay. Next day, I got up early in the morning, 6:30. Saturday morning, there's not much traffic. And I thought, okay, now I'm going to give it some, you know, some bombing, you know. And I took this out. My first impression was, okay, it drives exactly like the XC60. Okay, it felt exactly like the XC60. Yes, 2-liter engine, same 8-speed gearbox. The power delivery, 252 brake horsepower, 350 newton meters of torque. But after driving for about a couple of hours, I stopped. I had a drink and I was just observing the car from where I was sitting in the stall. You know, looking at the lines, dimensions, getting emotional feedback of the people around, you know, who walk, who look up to the car. And some people came up to me, oh, your car, a new car, what car is it and all that. Then I said to myself, okay, now it's time for me to just drive it leisurely. But I want to take it into the city and come back out. Mm. Why I want to take it into the city, I want to see how that the sound system works, how comfortable it is in traffic and everything else. But as I was getting to the city, I realized one thing. I'd kept it in comfort mode. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't very excited about the performance of the car. So I changed the mode to dynamic. You know, sometimes you just forget.
Yeah.
Because you get into so many test cars, you think, oh, this is it. But then I got into a touch screen, just like in the XC60 and XC90, I went into dynamic mode. And now dynamic mode, immediately the character of the car changes. Immediately the response from the gearbox, the torque, everything changes. But now I'm getting to the city. So, you know, I have to go back into comfort mode. So I drove in the city again, very comfortable, very quiet, nice to drive, nice environment. Then you play with the stereo and you really pump it up because why? You want to get rid of all that exterior hullabaloo, you know? Came back out and I said, okay, now I'm going to take it a bit out of the city to go back into dynamic mode. And then I started playing with the suspension. you know, trying to go around corners a bit faster and everything else. This car actually is not too bad. It handles like a little hot hatch.
Oh.
A little hot hatch. Of course, because of the big wheels, you might feel it wallowing a little bit and you push it around the corners too fast. But that's because you've got 21-inch wheels sitting on a high-riding vehicle. So it's not as nippy, as tight as a hot hatch. But you can almost keep up if you're driving and chasing up to a hot hatch. It's a comfortable city SUV. It's a crossover. 255,000, you can either decide to buy something from the Germans.
Yeah.
But the Germans will not give you all this in its lineup, including the safety features. And the Germans will not give you this kind of quality at this price range.
When we were at the launch, somebody asked, like, what options does this car not have? And the CEO basically said, the only option this car doesn't have that we're bringing now is a panoramic sunroof.
Exactly. You're right.
It has
exactly
every single box ticked, which is why it costs slightly higher. But I think you're getting a lot of bang for your buck.
The only thing now is, are you willing to accept the Volvo badge against the German brand badges? That's all.
I think it is such an amazing car. I don't think we're being biased in this.
Exactly.
Because it is genuinely a really good car.
And if you're looking at a Mini, go and have a look at this.
Yeah, totally. But anyway, I think we should go to the 7-point inspection.
Yes.
So number one, who is this car for?
Primarily, I think it's for 25 to 35. But if you're someone around my age, 50 years old, and thinking, hey, I want to feel a little bit young and, you know, trendy, why not?
Number two, so how does it stack up against the Mini Countryman, the BMW X1 and the Mercedes GLAs?
Okay, with the GLA, of course, this is bigger, better equipped. With the BMW X1, definitely bigger, definitely better equipped. Against the Mini, against the Countryman especially, I think it's nearly apple to apple, but the features on this is better. And whatever it is, the Mini Countryman lacks rear boot space, which this has a lot.
Yeah.
Rear leg room, which this has. And also, I think, you know, if you put it side by side, you'll realize that this car is also a little bit more, you know, the styling is, you know, Mini is iconic.
Yeah.
People definitely are drawn to it. But this car also, you're drawn to it simply because of that Tonka toy look, you know. You know, so I think to create an impression on the road, I think Volvo has done it with the XC40.
So number three, how is this car priced in comparison to the Mini?
Initially, when I saw the price, I said, you know, 255, it's going to be a little bit difficult to convince certain people because it's only slightly lower than the German competitors. But when you see the spec and safety features on this car and also the power delivery of this engine, then you start thinking, you know, why am I paying more? Exactly. Why am I paying more, you know?
So number four, we're obviously in Malaysia where there's a lot of potholes. Is the ride quality any good?
In comfort mode, no issue. No issue at all.
Dynamic mode?
Dynamic mode, yes, you do feel it because why, it's stiffer, you know?
Yeah.
But that's with any brand, with any brand.
Number five, is it enough for a small family?
Enough.
25 to 35, maybe two kids?
Okay, I'm a small family. I have two kids.
Yeah.
I have a housekeeper. Five of us, we got into it, no problem. I mean, my kids are not, you know, basketball players. You know? So height is not an issue. So, yeah, it's fine.
Number six, obviously this car is well equipped, but are there any other interesting bits about this car?
Well, there's so many interesting bits. Do we have an extra 45 minutes? No, there's just way too much. I mean, you go to dsf.my, the whole list of features is there. But the most important thing is something like this, you need to go into the showroom, touch, feel, and let the sales guy give you 15 minutes to just get behind the wheel. And I think you'll easily be convinced. 15 minutes.
Number seven, the final question. Should you consider this car for this price across segments?
Definitely, but it's still going to be a bit difficult. Even though what we've said and what we've seen and felt, there are still people out there who will go for brand.
Yeah.
So that was our AT&T on headlight maintenance and, you know, remembering to do something with your headlamp. And also, as we always promise, a car review. Sometimes we don't deliver, but this time we have a car review, the Volvo XC40 T5R design. And we are done for this Saturday. Thank you, Arif, with all the news. Thank you for joining me on the show. And this is Daniel Fernandez from the only auto show on air, Cruise Control.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.